AI. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Hampton and Dwight on Eagle FM, your favorite duo here on Eagle FM, your drive time show, Monday to Friday, keeping the company from 4 to 6. And one topic after another, we just do it, like DJ Khaled like to say, another one. We just go, another one. I know, right? Another one. We just go, another one. Another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, today's Wednesday, right? Because in my head, I'm going, is today Thursday? But that's how far, that's how broke I am. And that's how desperate I am to, attempt to survive until month end. Translation, I'm just broke. Today's discussion is going to be based on gold. From the look of things, thanks to the geopolitical instability, which has basically escalated. This is not something new. But a lot of countries, from the look of things, according to the World Gold Council, are stockpiling gold, a.k.a. they are buying more of it than usual times, basically. So now what we are seeing is there's literally a scramble for gold by a lot of central banks. Every central bank want to make sure that they have the oldest and most reliable commodity to back up their economy. And gold has often, from the look of things, historically been that reliable friend when it comes to backing up your currency as a financial institution. Mm. So that scramble is now, that scramble is now having a little bit of, scramble is creating, obviously a demand, and everyone wants to put their hands on gold now. Dwight, going through this, I can't help but, start asking myself again, how are we doing in this scramble as a continent?
Oh, as a continent, Africa, in terms of the largest producers in the continent of gold, Ghana is the biggest at 187 tons.
Yeah.
South Africa then second, then followed by Burkina Faso, Mali, Sudan, top from number 3 to number 5, they are already problem children. Yeah. Then you've got Guinea. I don't know which Guinea this is, but it's Guinea. You've got Zimbabwe next. Surprise, surprise.
After the Gold Mafia documentary, I'm not surprised.
Well, I'll still put it like being in the top 5 of the continent, still surprise.
Yeah.
Or not top 5, but rather top 10. You can then get the Ivory Coast, then Tanzania, the DRC, Niger, Liberia, Mauritania, Senegal, and Madagascar. Namibia also...
Wait, Sudan is not there?
Sudan is. It's in the top 5.
Yeah. No, not surprised.
So, it's surprising to see DRC in position 10, and also specifically that much of this has to do with our particular conversation of the gold production.
Yeah.
But when you look at the world's biggest producers of gold, China is number 1, followed by Russia. Okay, no surprises there. Followed by Australia.
Okay, just hold that thought. The first one is the biggest producer by mining.
Yeah, just extracting.
From the extractive point of view, Africa is topping the chart.
No, Africa is basically the first African you'll find is only Ghana in the top 10 producers. Yeah. So Ghana, not even South Africa, breaks into the top 10.
That's an interesting one.
Because when you have to look at the African production scale, because obviously what we announced at the start
of this year?
Yeah, it was the start of this. Was it the start of this year, Helmut? Or was it in last year?
When our central bank basically brought up the whole idea of having our own gold stockpile.
It was last year.
Yeah.
It was last year.
It was last year.
Yeah, we spoke about it last year. So when that thing happened, when we also basically had to explain the difference between the gold standard and the gold reserve.
Yeah.
Because people immediately thought, sorry, having a gold reserve means you'll go to the gold standard, which won't happen. It's a difficult thing to manage, and it's a difficult thing also to maintain. Because that means if you go and argue against any other country, all that country has to do as an enemy is buy up all the gold in the world.
And you're cooked.
Yeah. So Namibia is also developing a gold reserve, just so that you guys know. However, our conversation today looks at, has this trend basically has it increased, has it sped up
political instability?
Exactly. Has it create? What are the main drivers, the main motivators of this particular activity? The scenario, obviously, that exists when I highlighted to everybody just now is that when you look at all regions in terms of the world's top 10 producers, you get China, Russia, Australia, Canada, and Peru. Peru, of all countries, top 5.
Peru.
Yeah, I had to throw in Peru there. I had to throw a little bit of shade on Peru because Ghana is literally number 6. Yeah. But then you also understand why, because the amount of tonnage that they produce in gold.
Yeah.
You then get United States in 7, Uzbekistan in 8, Mexico in 9. Indonesia in 10. Then comes South Africa from 11. And as we obviously go down this particular line and you try to look for Namibia, I can't even find Namibia on this list. Yeah, Namibia is not even countable on this list because, I mean, the lowest producer here is Sweden at 5.9. And just above it is New Zealand. Who would have known? New Zealand also has gold. But yeah. So there we have it. The particular, and this was this last assessment was looked at the end of 2025. Now, gold production, dear listeners, is not just exclusively associated to just central banks, because gold gets used in other things,
including jewelry,
including even electronic devices, consumer electronics.
Yeah, actually, gold conducts, electricity. I think it's the most excellent conductor of electricity. But the thing is, we don't have it in abundance like we do copper.
Yeah, and copper.
Now, I mean, copper wires are being stolen. Can you imagine gold wires?
Helmut, that's why no one will put it in as a gold wire, Helmut.
No one
will put it in as a gold wire, Helmut. I mean, you don't even have to look very far. You'll just say no.
Like, absolutely not.
Yeah. So, on the aspect of production. So, the production is there. We know it's there.
So, by production, we're talking about extraction, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you've got to ask the question in terms of, okay, so, when we look at this particular trend of what's happening with the central banks and why are they producing, why are they stockpiling? The main biggest driver, biggest motivator, biggest reason they give is because block plus block equals unblock. Andy's theory.
You're forgetting Donald Trump's name?
Yeah. I almost call him the big orange guy, which is John Stewart's label for him. So I didn't want to steal someone else's label. So I rather went with block.
And it was going to be John Stewart.
I rather went with block plus block equals unblock guy. So Donald Trump's particular, I want to call it like indecisiveness about the communication he's also giving the world regarding the Strait and the Iran deal. This obviously also speaks towards a discussion that it in all fairness, no one can see anything clearly coming through. I mean, Helmut, remember back on Friday when we heard about the MOU supposedly for this peace deal?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the reaction that you, myself, and David had at the same time? We were like, Yeah, let's give Donald Trump by till the end of this week to see whether or not we will actually get anything tangible regarding the description, the text, the context, the direction, the stated goals of this thing. And can you believe it? Up until last night, John Stewart interviewed two journalists who wrote a book about basically about Trump's tenure from his first term to now into his second term, about the way Trump communicates and how communication gets disseminated from the White House. And these two journalists basically said that it is a weird thing because no one knows what he will say next. And then they were asked the question primarily about what do they think in terms of when you look at, you know, in bare bones communication style and communication strategy, do they feel that Donald Trump believes what he says sometimes? Because Helmut, he will tell you one thing right here, like we've seen many times, and then just next week or at the end of the day, he says the exact opposite of what he said this morning on the same topic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this particular report basically highlights the growing frustration of central banks with regarding to how the United States is managing the currency that the whole world was backing themselves on. This is what this report highlights, even though this report doesn't say so in its executive summary. But when you look at the discussion specifically on the key highlights of that summary, they say here, similar findings from previous surveys, central banks continue to hold favorable expectations on gold. Now, you've got to ask yourself, why would these favorable positions increase on gold? Respondents overwhelmingly, that's now 89% of them, believe that global central bank gold reserves will increase over the next 12 months, which they obviously are.
Yeah.
They also highlight in the next point, this year, a record 45% of these respondents expect their own gold reserves to increase. And a majority of the remaining respondents indicated that they expect no change, while 1% expected their institution's gold reserves to decrease. This probably could be in direct relation towards having to pay for things, Helmut, that these governments are trying to ease a burden off of their local civilian populations. Namibia has already done it with the oil, with the petroleum products. Mm. I mentioned it yesterday. Namibia has already done it. And the question rather becomes then, will this then sort of like become the resource as opposed to the petrodollar to literally keep as your country in reserve? And then technically that this resource is exchanged for the equivalent of the amount of money that your country has to pay to another country's central bank when paying for exports or imports or duties or tariffs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Would this then become the strategy? Now, silently, it looks like a yes. Very publicly, you don't know, because activities are still taking place in US dollar denominations.
Yeah.
Trade is still taking place. And since we don't know what is in the trade deal with Iran, and yesterday it's A-OK, today the two parties are just angry with each other for some reason. Apparently they tried calling the IAEA headquarters at 2 a.m. in the night in Geneva. I know, John Stewart was going like, who will answer your phone at 2 a.m. in the night?
How old is Peter Grossi?
No, what's his name? Rafael Grossi.
Rafael Grossi.
He's like in his 50s. He's already put in his nomination or his candidacy for Guterres' job.
Look, man, the reason why I'm pointing that out is that I'm in my 30s,
mm.
and calling me at that time is a waste of your time. Now, I can only imagine how things are going to be when I'm in my 50s. Calling me in...
Now, remember, this is J.D. Vance and his team was now. That showed up most now. And J.D. Vance and his squad, because he held a press conference there at that negotiation situation, while also making a very, very, very weird joke. I don't want to say the
it's
joke.
John
I don't want to say the... No, it's not John Stewart's joke. It's literally J.D. Vance's joke.
Oh. Okay, now...
It's a joke so borderline racist, Helmut, I cannot say it. And this was said by the Vice President of the United States.
Okay, look, I think that this here is part of the problem. If you can look at it, the security discussion or security guarantees by the U.S. To the Gulf countries is under a lot of questions. And now, basically the entire global economy in terms of reliability, in terms of reliability, is also under a lot of questions. So now, when you look at it from the security, guarantees in the Gulf region to a lot of central banks across the world, basically it's stockpiling gold. The common denominator they all have in common is reliability. And the thing is, right now, the president of the country that has the biggest economy and the owner of basically of the currency that a lot international trade relies on is cannot be trusted because he says one thing in the morning and forget the time frame. You know, Trump will say one thing
a minute ago,
And then after blinking, he say a whole complete opposite of what he just said a couple of seconds ago. So again, they say reliability in the commander in chief of a country that has an economy so large, if it went down, it will take a lot of country's economy along with it. And we were basically, and I think the presidents are more like the taste of what that will be. It's a good thing we have a historical reference for that. Just look at the 2008 financial crisis. That was an excellent example that basically showed us that the global economy is so interconnected. And now, albeit there are bigger economies and there are smaller economies. If you look at, a country's economies, just look at the January 3rd. The toppling of Maduro in Venezuela. There's not much of global economic shakedown that happened because Venezuela was not as connected to the global economy as the United States is. So now that means if what happened to Venezuela was to happen to countries like China or the US, the economic chaos will be unmeasurable. So there's a lot of unpredictability with regards to the decisions coming out of the White House, and there's a lot of unpredictability, and that is cascading to the unpredictability with regards to what's going on, and the unpredictability, by the way, is taking place, it's impacting both domestic and foreign policy of the United States. Now, both their domestic and foreign policy impact countries across the planet. So now, it's not surprising to look at, to see, nations leaders trying to figure out, a plan B just in case things don't end the way that we, at least hope, to see things ending, especially in relations to the Strait of Hormuz. It can be closed and open at any time. And the war can either calm down or escalate at any time. The unpredictability is emanating from the White House for the most part.
Yeah.
Because the decisions that are made. There's one very funny video of who is this? A Paul. I just forgot his first name. The guy who was, I'm not sure if he still is the head of the Federal Reserve.
What is the guy's name? The guy that argued is the guy that argued with Trump about the renovations that were being done at the rafters.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it was
The guy with the gray hair. In the specs.
Look, the thing is, the jokes about that joke is coming out of forex traders because they say that they like to say that he's
something Powell.
It's something Powell. Yeah. Now his good afternoon is the most expensive good afternoon in the world, Because when he's giving an announcement, if it's a negative announcement, the stock's about to crash.
Yeah.
The stock prices go, you know, take a nosedive. If it's a positive announcement, everything in the global economy is going okie-dokie. So everything he say has a lot of domino effects.
Jerome Powell.
Jerome Powell. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm going to say Jeremy.
Jeremy? Now you're just thinking about Top Gear.
I watched a whole bunch of Top Gear and another TV show where the Top Gear guys were, because they all technically are journalists, and they would just have this banter of, yeah, this is what happens if you write for this establishment, and that's what happens if you write for that establishment.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then Jeremy went through the one guy with a pen.
All that thought, we have a commercial break coming up.
The real good chicken frozen mixed portions. Okay, Dorashi ke. Oma veravali nungwei, nesenda omirongungwei nungwei. Oyitira imwe, yo machine wo clover. Full cream, ilo, low-fat milk UHT process. Iri mwa hamano moka pakete. Okay, Dora, efele no mirongana tu na hamano, nesenda omirongungwei nungwei. Oshoyo, kilograma tiri natu, yo right brand macaroni. Omenashi ke, doro mirongo hamano nambari, nesenda omirongungwei nungwei. Enda tuedi, potinashi kongushu vio mafiku atano ajulae, odura oyo tuwei. Yangatashi hapu na ShopRite.
Welcome back. We are 30 minutes into a home run, and we're here until the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today we're talking about the World Gold Council and their report on how a lot of countries, basically central banks, the countries and their central banks are stockpiling gold because of the unpredictability of the current global and economic atmosphere. And now, the thing is, when it comes to things that a leader can say, it's first of all, in the world of democracy as we know it, the leader is a representative of the people. At least that's how it looks like, and it's more often recited because that's how it is on paper.
Mm.
Yeah, and one thing that you see is that. There's something that who is this guy? There's something that Matthew Miller said after he left at the end of the Trump administration. One thing that he pointed out was that he appeared on a YouTube podcast and he was asked one question that do you think what's going on in Israel is war crimes? Now his answer was there is no doubt that there's definitely war crimes going on there. But here's the thing. The host asked him one question that, couldn't you have said that when you were the, because I believe he was the spokesperson for the Biden administration. So his answer was, you have to understand that when you are the spokesperson at the White House in Washington, you are not expressing your personal opinion. You are expressing the opinion of the United States government.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, now that statement is so profound because every time that I watch that video and hear him say that, it brings to mind what is known as vicarious liability. Now, vicarious liability is something that you find in,
employees'
responsibility, and
but employers, it's the opposite also, the employers' involvement in the actions of employees.
Exactly. Now, vicarious liability is based on a very long Latin maxim that goes something like qui facit per alium est per indax, si facit per se ipsum. Translation, he who acts through another acts as though they were doing it themselves.
Mm.
Now, in other words, think of it this way. If I'm in the field doing Eagle FM's, Eagle FM's job, or more like in Eagle FM's capacity, I'm not acting for me. In other words, all my screw up out there are going to be,
it's going to knock back on Eagle FM.
Exactly. Now, legally, whoever that I'm going to screw up there, not the positive screw, the negative one.
I don't know why you're saying, using that term. Okay. Yeah. But
yeah.
Now,
right. The thing is, they are now legally they can't hold me personally accountable. They will come and hold Eagle FM.
Even though you are the one directly involved.
Exactly. I'm the one that's directly involved. Yeah. But what they will do is, if they have to bring to file a lawsuit, they will file it against Eagle FM, and Eagle FM will use their internal mechanisms to hold me accountable, because I was out there in their capacity. So what Matthew Miller was pointing out was that when you are the spokesperson of a country, you are not telling the world what you think. You are telling the world decisions that to be made by the leadership. Now that's how it's supposed to be. Now, because when you put it that way, it becomes predictable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when you have a leader in position that seems to be saying things that they're just scratching out of their head, it becomes very unpredictable, especially when everyone that questions that particular leader's decisions, they get fired.
Well, the funny thing is still even, Helmut, a discussion even of, even when that particular leader is asked multiple days in a row, multiple times in a row, are you sure about the thing that you said just yesterday? Now, first and foremost, in some cases, I personally find it very annoying. If you can clearly see the person already said yes back there. Now, you get these journalists that act like personal vendetta machines. Look, if the person said no, and you see the action is the opposite, you've most already observed the action. Why would you still hammer on a situation, even though it might be another development probably taking place?
Yeah.
On the scenario specifically of this Strait of Hormuz discussion, which actually is the basis for the heightened increase in gold acquisition by the central banks around the world.
Yeah, because no one, I mean, it's, you know, well, it's, no, one thing, I'm not sure if it is you are the one that pointed that out, that investors like one thing, predictability.
Mm.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why every time that we talk about Namibia being a good investment and having a good investment environment, one thing that we like to point out is what we have had ever since our independence, we have had a smooth transition of leadership.
Mm.
So there's that. So that makes the political atmosphere predictable, which then translates into a predictable economic atmosphere. So when you bring up discussions of countries like Mozambique, for example, it becomes a whole different discussion.
And Mozambique, in its own right, was a weird discussion because trying to hide money, but every time your government gets told by the IMF, they say, "Now, when are you paying back?" But still, I'm digressing.
Yeah.
So, as we look at this particular discussion, dear listeners, now, the reason obviously given from the get-go by the World Gold Council is that many of the countries realize the volatile geopolitical situation and the volatile economic environment that obviously is manifesting.
And there's the key word, volatile, unpredictable.
Well, it's not manifesting, it's already there.
Yeah, it's already there.
It has been unpredictable since April last year with the Liberation Day tariff announcement discussions.
Yeah.
It has become worse because of Venezuela, 3 January. And it has become worse after that from 28 February heading into this direction. Now, here is to answer your other question about the predictability aspect.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows. And I'm referencing the John Stewart interview with the two journalists and their book where they're looking at Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Can you believe, Hamoud, for such an important negotiation process with Iran, between Iran, Israel, and the United States by Pakistan as the moderator, no one knows what's in the text of the agreement.
And
apparently also even high-ranking officials within the U.S. government don't know what's in the text.
And we are back to unpredictable.
Yeah. Now, if you're a gold-producing country, and if you're an oil-producing country as well, which is the opposite of the gold, it's known as the black gold, the downside is you would like to know as quick as possible whether or not traffic can safely move through the Strait of Hormuz. You don't want to be asked, you don't want to sit with a half-baked answer or a half-baked response of, Yeah, maybe we will look at the finer details later on. Mm-hmm. Hence the reason why I referenced the 2 a.m. supposed phone call of the IAEA. But J.D. Vance said this. He said literally they tried calling the people apparently not yesterday, Sunday night. No? When did I have the sick leave, Helmut? Monday.
Monday.
Yeah, today's Wednesday. Apparently back on Monday or Sunday, they tried calling the IAEA peoples in order to be part of the conversation and the negotiation process with the Iranians. Now, here's the thing. When you think about it, this whole discussion began back in last year after the Iran, after the IAEA inspectors went to Iran, mm-hmm. came back from Iran. Remember what I said, Helmut? That first bombing that took place last year.
Yeah.
Another one of this year. Where Israel just started shooting at Iran was because of an IAEA press conference. And because a guy in that press conference, an American in that press conference asked the question, is it true that Iran sits with documents they're not supposed to sit with? Which supposedly is also a discussion of where does this question come from? Until I also realized that in many countries around the world, the intelligence agencies of those countries basically work very closely with certain journalists in their economies, where they feed these guys reports.
You're forgetting one thing. Let's just go back in history now, shall we?
Yeah. Oh, no, we are still in history.
If Iran, the bombing that took place last year by Israel and Iran was motivated by some of the things that may have been said during the IAEA discussion, that made Israel react that way, the supposed documents that Iran had, they were not supposed to have. Okay, we are talking about espionage here. And espionage is something that all countries do to each other.
Yeah.
1979, during the Shah overthrown in Iran, those students that stormed the American embassy, what did they find in that embassy?
A lot of
espionage documents, which were shredded at the time, and they took months, if not years, to basically glue them together. If you went to that,
oh no! Do you know what they did? Remember the Australian that I told you, the guy that the streamer that went to Iran last year. He went to that university. Do you know that the old American embassy in Tehran?
In Iran, yeah, it's now a museum.
It's a museum.
Yeah,
in that museum. Are those documents?
Those documents of them basically.
They were literally put together. They show you. This is what they collected.
No, look, that's why I'm saying that when it comes to espionage, countries steal technology from each other all the time.
Yeah.
The Chinese came up with gunpowder. How the heck did it find itself in the midst of Europe?
And Marco Polo went and visited them and
visit my behind.
Homeboy came back, he had an extended visit, and Marco was enjoying the pasta. He also brought back the recipe for pasta.
The thing is,
we call pasta today.
Now Israel runs one of the most powerful intelligence on the planet. That means they have some of the most powerful tech companies in the world.
Mm.
Now, translation, they run around the world stealing information just like any country does. I mean, corporate espionage. Now, if you just look at it this way, you'll understand it much better once you look at it from from the relationship that politicians and multinational corporation executives have in common.
Yeah.
Yeah. Multinationals have a lot of interests scattered across the world. And as a result, so what they do is they just fund political campaigns of a bunch of people that want to be in the spotlight so that they can find themselves in executive office.
Mm.
So what comes out of that is you have policies being made that is in line with the interest of the campaign contributors. So when you look at from that angle, if that's taking place at the top level of the, what do you think embassies are doing?
Their job.
Now embassies are there to conduct diplomatic relations. It's an excellent initiative.
Mm.
Yeah. But the thing is, One thing that I think it's very clear at this point that all governments know about each other is that they all steal stuff from each other.
Yep.
They all do. Behind all the all protocol observed, they are not idiots. They know that. Which I think is very fascinating.
Well, it's sort of like a given, but that's also the discussion, Helmut, basically, when you look at every... what's the thing's name? Every embassy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what we Namibians do, but basically, in many cases, they come here to gather intelligence. Okay, not just Namibia, any other African country and anywhere else in the world as well. The question is just, do we as Africans also conduct the same thing?
Oh, boy.
Look, an embassy, Hamoud, is usually the first point of contact between two countries. But how do you reach that level of having missions in each other's countries? That means you guys must have signed and met, had a cup of coffee, a buffet. And before we continue, we have an ad break.
Join us for the Ehangano Concert Volume 2 with Ali Tobias. Experience an unforgettable evening featuring songs from her latest album, A Bilo, performed live with a full band. Special guest appearances by Tate Buti, DA, Paige, and One Accord. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting the Our Lady Orphanage. The event takes place on 4 July 2026 at the National Theatre of Namibia. Tickets are available on Web Tickets Namibia for 450 Namibian dollars. Don't miss this powerful night of music, inspiration, and giving back. Ihangano Concert Volume 2. See you there.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We continue with the importance, with the basically the main reason behind a lot of central banks or a lot of countries and their central banks stockpiling gold. It's because of how unpredictable the global economy's biggest players are. For one, they are on each other's necks. Yeah. And
Who's on each other's necks?
The biggest economic powerhouses, China and the U.S., don't like each other.
Oh, did you hear about the latest report? Apparently, that the EU discovered China's directly selling to the Russians for supplying to the Russians for the Ukraine conflict.
Supplying what?
Armament.
And that's surprising. How?
Which I also don't know, because I was also going like, they've got a border with each other. It's not like you have to trace the boat on the sea.
Yeah, look, that's like China reporting.
The truck can drive across the border.
That's like China reporting that, well, Germany is giving Ukraine arms, and we'll ask China the exact same thing. And that's a problem. How? They're allies. They will arm each other.
Yeah, but here's the thing. China has continuously said, no, we don't do that. Look, China is under no obligation to say yes
or no.
Or no.
Yeah.
They don't even have to answer. They can just say, well, in this particular space and time, it is prudent that we better watch each other's words. Which doesn't mean anything to anyone, but just tells everybody, just be careful of the words that you use, basically.
That's the most interesting thing about the world of geopolitics. Words matter a lot.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Hamoud. We are
unless you're Donald Trump, then
we are literal beings as humans.
Yeah.
The words a person on a TV set says for the world by saying, Today, Lesotho is going to get 100% tariffs. The average person in Lesotho is going to think, oh my goodness.
We're cooked.
My life is cooked. Things are, the economy is bad. That's first thing. And they don't even know what the word tariff means. They don't even know where a tariff is deployed or is applied. That's the thing, Hamid. Humans are literal organisms. So, it's all literally all about optics.
Now, okay.
And then Hegseth is at the NATO summit talking absolute, you know, rubbish about the other NATO countries. So, yeah, there's a lot of...
Look, a few months ago...
Communication.
We are back to the unpredictability here. And I like the word that the World Gold Council uses. What word did those guys use?
Which one?
For unpredictable. Volatile. Yeah. And now, here's the thing.
And that, when you use the word volatile, then you know it is so chaotic. No one even wants to step in there.
You know where I first came across that word?
Where?
Sodium, in a science class.
Do you know where I came across
it? It's reactive. It's just throw sodium on water and it goes kaboom.
Yeah, but do you know where I met it?
Yeah.
In a business class. Now imagine to yourself when a business sentence says,
yeah,
the market is volatile. You sit there looking to yourself, how would a market become volatile? If I go out into the Namibian economy, it doesn't look volatile. And then you realize as you get older, what the volatility looks like. Oh, when you've got 28 February or a 3 January happening, that is when things become volatile. Something completely different.
Yeah.
Impacting your everyday life in the southern hemisphere of the world.
Yeah. Now, picture it this way. Countries that were being tariffed a few months ago are now the ones that they want a relationship with. And when the war started, especially with the ones with Iran, they didn't have a clear objective. That's one of the reasons why I pointed out that the unpredictability in the White House policies are both... can be seen both at home and abroad. Mm. It's both in their domestic and foreign policy. So the first thing was a regime change, and that didn't work because they thought they could just do a Maduro, you know, on Iran. And when that didn't work out, they went straight for destroy their nuclear stockpile.
But they didn't do a Maduro, Hamid. They did worse than a Maduro.
It didn't work. That's the thing.
No, it did work. The regime change.
No,
but not...
They killed the father.
Yeah.
The son took over. So in other words, the government is pretty much...
The same.
Exactly.
Now, that's what I'm saying. But here's the thing. Apparently, the son is apparently planning revenge some way or another.
And clearly...
Well, you would also be angry, Hamid, if your sister and her husband died in the same room with your father.
Yeah, you know, the reason why... That's why I totally agree with Jordan Peterson when he said that we all have the Austrian painter in us. Mm. We're all capable of doing that.
Of murder, of violent crimes.
Oh, yeah.
Every person.
You can have the nicest person harm their loved one.
Oh.
And you'll make a monster out of them.
Oh, and some cases the people don't stop.
That's the thing about revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. So the unpredictability is coming, you know, is coming from, I will tariff you to the next month, I want you to be my friend. And when the war started with Iran, the much of the, especially in relations to their relationship with European countries, they kept saying, we don't need you.
Mm.
And then halfway through, they changed their mind to we need your airspace and some of your tarmac to use as launch pads. So
and some of your islands and naval bases.
There you go. I want you today. I don't want you tomorrow. I need your help today. Tomorrow, get out of my life. So it's sounds like I had a relationship like that once. It's it's annoying.
Who was the guy that explained? Was the guy from Poland? The NATO? No. It wasn't Mark Ritter.
Yeah.
But it was, is it Donald Tusk? The guy from Poland. But one of those NATO leaders basically said, the attack on Iran,
yeah,
no one even anticipated it. But we all knew who threw the first rock.
So you attacked a country without letting me, your ally, know. But now I have to, you know. So you'll only come. So you're coming to let me know when you need defending. But you didn't consult me on the idea of attacking.
But here's the thing, Hamoud. That is exactly Iraq of 2003. That is exactly Afghanistan.
Not even Libya. The exact same thing. I mean, Congress was pissed in 2011 at Obama.
Yeah.
Because he didn't ask for approval from Congress, because according to the Constitution, Congress is the one that has the power to do that.
Mm. But and there is a piece of law that the U.S. president can use to bypass. Do you know that they've got a law bypassing Congress?
They have about 60 days. And, if at the end of those 60 days, the war is still on, they're still ongoing, they have to come back to Congress, which is why Trump right now is in between a rock and hard place, because I think about a day or two ago, the Congress passed, a War Powers Act. Translation, he's now required, if he wants to continue with that war, he will have to get approval from Congress. It's either that or he will have to withdraw the troops from wherever they are in all countries that they were basically engaged in. Mm. So now you have all those guys that are, participating in the block equals unblock. They, it's kind of difficult to see how the direction things are going to take. But when you are a president who is unpredictable, Trump, you could just tell them, you know what? Well, that's fine. You can just keep your laws. I'll just go to war because I'm a president. Now, then you have a lot of unconstitutionality. Now you have the constitutional, the countries of the president, violating the constitution of the country.
Mm.
And you are outside here telling him to respect international law. You see the problem with that. He doesn't even respect his own constitution. You want him to respect international law.
Which is not
constitutional. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. And the concern is the central banks are still buying.
Now, that is the reason why they are saying, look, this guy has thrown caution to the wind. Doesn't care.
Caution? you throw that, you call that caution to the wind, caution?
Yeah, but look, you'd expect him to basically conduct himself in a way that someone in his position is, aka a president of one of, if not the most powerful country economically and militarily, with a lot of geopolitical influence. So in other words, what he does impacts a lot of countries, which is why we are paying $15 for cab today, is because of that decision.
Which is still a ridiculous position. Which is still a ridiculous thing here in Namibia.
Yeah,
I still don't understand why you would go up if the petrol price goes up. You go up, the petrol price goes up. I mean, talk about just immediately causing an inflation.
Yeah. Now, the fact that you have unpredictability in respect to first of all, listening to his own staff. It's unpredictable. It's difficult to know what's he gonna say next, what's he gonna do next, so everything that he's going to say and do is going to have a positive or negative impact on the global economy. And the thing is, it's difficult to tell what he's going to say or what he's going to do next and how it's going to impact the global economy.
Yeah.
That volatility and that unpredictability is the reason why countries are going, you know what? We can't depend on him anymore, because it's difficult to depend on someone who is unpredictable. So let's do ourselves a favor and just stockpile gold. Which brings us now to the question. Africa, when it comes to the extractive industry, we have the resources. The problem is, do we have it in our storages? Because more often, all the extractive resources that's mined on the African continent is put on ships and then shipped out of the continent.
Mm.
Now, if we are doing that with lithium, cobalt, and manganese and all the copper, you name it, zinc, if we are doing that with, we're sure we are not doing it the exact same thing with gold. So, Which now that brings us to the list of countries. Now that's also from the first quarter of 2026 snapshot from the World Gold Council. They have a list of gold reserves in tonnage for the first quarter of 2026.
Mm.
Coming up on top in terms of gold reserves and basically their sheer size. The countries that has the most gold in their reserves. China is number one. Coming in Japan. And you have India, Singapore, Brazil, Mexico, Thailand, United States, Poland, United Kingdom. We're not even in the top 10.
Mm.
So that means if the volatility that a lot of countries are and central banks are stockpiling gold for, if the chaos ensue, we are again on the receiving end of whatever is coming.
Here's the worst part. Here's the worst part.
Hold that worst part on the other side of the break.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was...
My man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give it more ice. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, aye. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Right. Now that we have the mics on, please repeat that again.
Okay.
For just
for our listeners, because they also saw it in the camera.
Yeah, gather your tissues for your tears are about to come out if you're an African.
So that thing that Helmut just said, specifically about preparedness because of volatility and issues primarily about the global international relations space, primarily revolving around what moves next and words next the U.S. government will say and use and do. The amount, the level of involvement in this year's World Gold Council, gold silver, gold production survey, no? Okay, but this year's survey, Africa was number three in having the highest respondents participating in this survey. For 2026, last year Africa was the second highest. The highest amount of central bank executives that responded came from Europe at 38%,
mm-hmm.
and 36% for 2025. This year in second place is Asia at 22%, and last year they were at 15% for 2025. This year Africa is 20%, and last year they were 23%. Now. We are literally number one. We are literally number two and number three for involvement in participation and giving answers. You know, we're those learners in the class that loves to answer the questions, but when it actually comes to answering the test, you know, the question paper in the exam, we just forget the answers because
yeah.
we don't know about practicals. We know about theory, but we don't know about practicals.
Yeah,
and that's literally what we look like. We know what the thing is called, we just don't know what to do during or in the event that the particular event or scenario happens.
Yeah.
Now, you obviously highlighted we sit with a massive deposit of the resource.
Yeah.
Which is key because you then once again ask yourself the question about where do we go to procure? If we have the resource, where would our central bank go to procure gold for storage? Because you can't just go get the thing at the hole and then go put it into your bank, into your central bank. It might be this big, Hamlet. A little nugget this big.
Mm-hmm.
Then is it worth the petrol to drive to the mining site and back? Really? Really? Is it worth driving the mining site and back?
You know what I will keep going back to?
Yeah.
McKinney, the Canadian Prime Minister's speech.
Yeah.
This is the speech that he gave at the World Economic Forum earlier this year.
Mm.
We know the story of international rules-based based order was particularly false, that the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient. that trade rules were enforced asymmetrically, and we knew the international law applied with varying rigor depending on the identity of the accused or the victim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now this next part is speaks to again unpredictability.
Mm.
Now this fiction was the fiction of the of the impartial application of international law. Now that was the fiction because we know that the practical reality of international law and how it was applied, and this was pointed out not just by McKinney, but this is something that I think Angelina Jolie pointed out was that 2023 with a Turkish journalist that after spending about 20 years in the in the humanitarian space, she was with the UNICEF for about 20 years. She came out of that according to she walked in thinking that, you know what, we're human beings, we're not perfect, we have these rules and we are going to enforce them impartially. But after 20 years in that space, she came out and basically realized that she learned that the law is applied, is not fairly applied. In other words, it's not as it, now international law is not as international in its application as it is in theory. It's very, it's very fair on paper, but in practical reality, it's not fair. And you can see this unfolding even to this day.
Yeah.
You know, the call to the IAEA, that call can only mean a part of the agreement between, a peace agreement between Iran and the U.S. is for Iran to open up its nuclear facilities for inspection, because this has happened before. Iran was so inspected, they had CCTV camera installed in most if not all the nuclear facilities,
which can be viewed by the IAEA guys all the way from Switzerland.
Yeah. Now, to this day, no one wants to have the very same discussion and the very same level of nuclear oversight with Israel. It's the International Atomic Energy Agency, but the international part only applies to Iran.
Or if you're in Namibia.
Not Israel.
Anyone else.
So this is the problem then, because it's international law on paper, but it's not very international when it's applied.
Mm.
So going back to McKinney's speech. Now, this friction, and he's talking about it in a reference to the world, as Canada for 4 decades, for basically 8 years, they knew that international law was not applied equally the world over, but they were on the benefiting side, so they didn't care. So it wasn't until basically, tariffs started flying left, right, and center, then they realized how it feels to be on the receiving end of the unequal application of international law.
Mm.
So then he just came up with this very wonderful speech. But anyway, according to him, this friction was useful. The American hegemony in particular helped provide public goods, open sea lanes, a stable financial system, collective security, and support for frameworks for resolving disputes.
Yeah.
So, again, it was predictable for a lot of countries, especially in the Western Hemisphere. That's why they relied on it. When the predictability left out through the window, they started basically talking up against it. Now, one thing I found interesting is that Anthony Blinken pointed out in his interview with Bloomberg that the Israelis tried to get Obama to go to war with Iran. Obama said no. The Israelis tried to get Joe Biden to go to war with Lebanon. Now Biden said no.
Mm.
And recently, one thing I found shocking was Hillary Clinton is saying the exact same thing. The question I'm asking myself now is, why now? Why are you telling us that now?
Mm.
Yeah. Now, in other words, they didn't want to share all this information over how much, influence Israel has, had and still has on American domestic and foreign policy, because they were benefiting from it. Now that they are on the receiving end of those foreign policies, let's solve it. Really? Which, again, is clearly nuts. But the whole idea that you see here is that just the two lines. So we placed a sign in the window. Now this is in a reference to the Czechish greengrocer he tells at the beginning of the speech. Now we participated in the ritual and we largely avoided calling out the gaps between a rhetoric of international law and reality. Now and then he goes on to point that this bargain no longer works. And I was like, yeah, now we're talking. Now you are being honest. You are speaking up against it because it's no longer working. Now, when he said that, what he did not know was that it has not been working for a lot of countries. That no longer works is in reference to mostly Western countries.
Mm.
Yeah, for Western countries, it no longer works. For a lot of countries, especially non-Western ones, it never worked. Now, then he says that this bargain no longer works. And let's be direct, we are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition. And now, imagine listening to that if you are from Iraq. You are like, we have been in the midst of that rupture that you're talking about. In other words, for a lot of countries that did not want to get in line with the American hegemony, everything has been unpredictable.
It's... When I think about it now, Helmut, it's not surprising that Jeffrey Sachs was trying to warn the world about 2025, 2026.
And politicians don't listen to experts. One thing I've come to learn, especially economists, they didn't listen to James O'Neill when he told them, yeah, now if you want your economy to be better, you may want to make friends out of the BRICS countries, a.k.a. Brazil, China, Russia, South Africa. Make friends out of this, especially the emerging economies. Now, because that's the trajectory the global economy is taking.
Yeah.
You know what politicians did? They decided to make enemies out of the exact same people they were told to make friends out of. And now we're talking about the global economy as unpredictable. Really?
Who made it unpredictable? Who made it unpredictable? For the particular point that I made about Sachs, because yeah. Jeffrey Sachs had been talking about Operation Sycamore for like 3 years now, up until last year.
Syria.
Yeah, which was Syria, which is that reference you gave specifically about also waging war where there was no need for a war.
Yeah.
Now, and yesterday I showed that these were all OPEC countries that were basically destabilized. Majority of them. When we obviously look at experts telling the world, guys, something's going to happen, and it's going to happen because of this particular venture, this particular policy, this mm-hmm. particular this particular treaty, or this particular agreement, or this particular development stemming from the United States specifically. For 2 years, we ignore the message. For 2 years, we just because one guy is saying it, but not on people are repeating the same message, we ignore it. But literally, like you also highlight, when it really comes to shove,
mm-hmm.
we always sit at the back. We are always responding too late. We are always the last ones to say, you know what, I saw it. I'm almost prepared, but I'm not prepared. And it's also a discussion of actually seeing and actually asking the question in terms of sometimes, how do we actually prepare as a country, even as Namibia, for some seriously tough times? How do we prepare? Because believe you me, a disaster risk fund just doesn't cut it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you can declare many things, according to the English language, as a disaster. A bride not showing up to the wedding, her own wedding ceremony, that's mm-hmm. a disaster. Yeah, sure. For one guy
yeah.
and the bride's family who's embarrassed.
Yeah.
But for the rest of the world, they're just like, people are unreliable. What did you expect?
Yeah.
But when you look at real world impacting developments, none of us saw 28 February.
No.
None of us even saw 3 January.
Now, you see, I think this is one thing that, especially after 3 January, What we did not know was, or at least what we did not anticipate, or basically what we did not know was that, I think, 3 January was, Nati's drive test. And,
which someone failed, right, Amun? Because you must always fail your first test.
Hey, look, well, they managed to get a president of a sovereign country and one night, and basically the government became, things went full chaos mode. So I think that was a practice.
Do you know what that
speaks about? And they were like, you know what? I think we are good for Iran. Oh boy.
Do you know what that speaks about? That speaks to the same test drivers that I've known. Yeah, predominantly many of them are women. They went and aced their test, the driver's test, mm-hmm. on the first go.
Yeah.
Do you know what's the worst part? They don't own a car, and they don't practice driving every day.
If you want to talk to me, directly. Don't go through the corners.
So what I discovered, and this is just from 3 people.
Yeah.
I stood there thinking to myself, so you get a right to get the license before that ad break.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 4 kg real good chicken frozen mixed portions for $209.99. 6x1 liter clover full cream or low fat milk UHT process for only $136.99 per pack. And 3 kg Rite brand macaroni for a low $62.99. Deals valid until 5 July 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back from that extended break. It's 18 minutes into the hour of 5, and we're going until 6. So we still have enough time to basically converse on how painful things are for the African continent. And my fear is it could get much more worse if we don't figure out how to do what other countries are doing, a.k.a., well, the stockpile.
Yeah. Stockpiling what, Hamad?
Gold.
Yeah, I know. but there's also other bunch of things of stockpiling.
There's a reason why I'm not talking about stockpiling stolen taxpayers' money in foreign financial institutions, because I think Africa has that covered already.
Mm.
So it's the backup plan for your country's economy.
Mm. Wait. You also have to ask the question in terms of what consideration is the backup plan.
Yeah.
Okay, we already answered the questions, those questions that you're now highlighting right now in the midway point. Mm. We answered them at the start of the discussion. But it's also a discussion of the point that you highlighted a little bit earlier,
mm-hmm.
a little bit later from the first point, but a little bit earlier. The one based upon where Africa finds itself in terms of being late at response.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing, Helmut. It's also literally the same, it's the exact same thing that happened in 2022 when Russia invaded Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And who showed up there with wagging fingers last, you know, being late to the game? Once again, Africa. Firstly, it was Ruto. And then Ruto was given an earful by Putin.
And Ruto came back and was like, change your plan.
Don't worry, guys. There's no bad blood, you know. It was just an honest argument taking place at a UN level. So every time you look at this discussion, we literally always last to react. Yes, we've got a lot of, we had the third highest amount of central banks responding to the survey, but even when you ask the question about contingency plans, what are you going to do? They all basically have this sort of like conceding feeling of, we are just doing this in the event that it all goes to nuclear fallout.
Yeah.
We must have something that we can revive the economy with. That's what you're reading between the lines, Amut.
Yeah, but in the event of a nuclear fallout, the economy will be the least of our worry.
True.
Yeah.
The air will be our worry.
Yep.
Yeah. The massive, what do they call those things? Radioactive winds, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, that explains the increase in the number of bunkers being constructed.
Oh, no, that's by the tech bros in New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's one very funny American guy, he's funny in a way that, he's a comedian. And one thing he pointed out was that...
if you didn't add the comedian at the partner, I would have been giggling the whole time.
I know.
How did this guy become funny?
One thing billionaires that are building bunkers are forgetting is we know where these bunkers are. And all we're going to do is, if we're left outside and we're still breathing, is we're going to use the few months or weeks that we have left to put cement on all the events.
Mm.
I'm like, okay, this guy is diabolical. But no, look, the biggest, the stupidity behind bunkers is when you're in the US and your bunker is in New Zealand, who is going to fly you literally across the globe to your bunker? Because your pilot has family members that they will want to save. Your bodyguards have family members that they will want to save. Your homies have family members that they want to save. If you're a billionaire, you have homies that are also billionaires, so your homies are good. Now, the thing is, I think COVID-19 pandemic gave us a taste of, you know, of how unpredictable the fallout of global chaos is. It's not something you can plan for. You can plan for it, but the eventualities will just be raining left, right, and center.
But here's the thing, Helmut. When you look at it in between the two hemispheres.
Yeah.
The hemisphere with the most nuclear warheads are all concentrated in the north.
Yeah.
In the northern hemisphere. Not even India is in the southern hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, India has a part that just touches the equator.
Mm-hmm.
But India is not in the southern hemisphere. Now, we in the southern hemisphere And I feel sorry for the top part of Africa, because they are in the northern hemisphere. But we in the southern hemisphere, we sit here looking at the fiasco. I'm assuming that, you know, our listeners also do the same exact thing. We sit here looking at this fiasco of, so this is a bunch of grown men who just have very expensive but very dangerous toys to play with. And who cannot even fly to each other and say, hey, listen, my guy, you know.
This is a dumb idea.
This is a really dumb idea. Can't we just be peaceful? Now, here's apparently what is on the table to try and quell or to try and deflate the animosity in this conflict. Is it $300 billion back to Iran, allowing Iran to make money from its oil sales, and finally allowing Iran to hold on to its nuclear material. The exact nuclear material that was supposed to have been confiscated by the said American government right now.
Now I know why Israel doesn't like it.
And now, what was John Stewart's words? Basically, there's one action away. Iran is one action away from being an Israel.
No,
they're being given money and they're allowed to do things.
Yeah, look, think of it this way. Now I get why Israel doesn't like it, because Israel is busy bombing the heck out of southern Lebanon. We're not going to talk about Gaza, because Gaza has basically been blown to smithereens. Now, Iran's foreign policy and foreign relations holds the Palestinian cause and Lebanon very dear to their foreign policy. Mm. And if there's one thing about Iran is they are not very good at changing once they have made a friend. Yeah. Ask the South Africans. Now, here's one thing that's interesting, though. I think Israel's biggest fear is that all that money that's being channeled into the Iranian economy is going to be used to even arm guys like the Hezbollah. Now, the thing is, one thing I have learned to redefine is the word terrorism. It turns out, when someone tells you that a group is a terrorist, ask them why. And that's a very that's a very important thing to know if you are an African, because you have to understand that, for the entire liberation struggle movement, liberation fighters were called what? Terrorists. So, I don't think that definition have changed very much.
Not easily.
So, in other words, a terrorist is not someone who is crazy and running around shooting people. It's someone that disagrees with my foreign policy in their country. That is a terrorist. Well, they just want you to leave, buddy.
Or, they were running something else. They were doing something else. They were backing another guy to becoming the political leadership of your own country. And there's a war of narrative taking place.
Narrative is important. So take Operation Timber Sycamore and the overthrow of Bashar al-Assad in Syria.
It took 15 years to achieve it. But
this is something that was instituted during the Obama administration. And that means, I think this is what a lot of non-Western leaders, like the Russian president, mean when they say, in the Western world, you can change a president, but the main goal behind the country never really changes, because even though you are looking at the change from Obama to Biden to from Obama to Biden to Trump the thing is, you are looking at Obama, Biden, is it Obama or Trump?
Obama, Trump, Biden.
Yeah, Obama, Trump, Biden, and then Trump again. Yeah. But nothing changed. The goal to overthrow Bashar al-Assad did not change, irrespective of who was in the office.
Mm.
So, that's a very interesting one. Now, So when you take guns and give them to those militias that were that helped them to overthrow Bashar al-Assad, weren't those guys terrorists?
Mm-hmm.
So look up.
And what happened to those guys? They went and began a civil war. But it's all in whose narrative the description of a terrorist exists in.
Yeah. So who? So it's all about who is defining the word and what their end goals are.
Yeah.
So they can label you terrorist today, and they can just call you a hero the next day. And we saw this with the Mujahideen, Al Qaeda, whatever you want to call them. All Rambo's movies are based on the West backing the Mujahideen in the fight for the, they'll call them liberation fight. Those guys were glorified like crazy.
Except is it Rambo 2?
And then,
Rambo 2 is the one where he was in Vietnam.
Rambo
3 is the one where he was in Afghanistan.
Now, you have the same problem here, even if you are looking at it from the Middle East or Vietnam.
Yeah.
Now, Rambo is being glorified in the middle of the Vietnam War. Well, the Vietnamese were just telling them to get the heck out of their country. Commercial break.
You know, there's something about opening a Chafo Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Chafo Lager and start the conversation. Chafo Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
And we continue. So narrative is, it's always important to educate yourself on narrative, I swear. Otherwise, you will be used to overthrow your own president, and then you will realize on the other side of that overthrow that you are even in a much more worse situation than you were when the president you overthrew was in office.
Mm.
Yeah. And this is the very same thing that I think that can be said about a lot of countries who that had their leaders overthrown. People participated in that overthrow. After the overthrow of that leader, well, the guys were like, all right, it was nice working with you guys. Goodbye. Then, so the countries basically more often descend into a civil war that is perpetual.
Mm.
Yeah, that's one scary picture.
It is. Because if you ever ask yourself the question, why hasn't the world known peace since 2000? Why haven't we known peace, Hammond? Even on the African continent, why haven't we known peace? Because why is peace so elusive?
Because war is lucrative?
Yeah.
I mean, after you pointed out that some investors prefer a war-torn country, then that's just diabolical.
True. And where do these investors sit? They sit in the northern
the global north.
Yeah. And they sit in the boardrooms that, unfortunately, same particular boardrooms also have contact to the same multinational banks that ultimately borrow money to the IMF, through the IMF and the World Bank, to the same developing country. So when you look at this aspect of diabolicalness, you get to understand why the template for the global south, the south to south cooperation, makes more sense.
It makes a lot of sense, yeah.
I mean, one guy at the EU Namibia Business Forum asked, he was a member of the audience. He asked, it was that same session, the same second session of the masterclasses. He asked the guy in the second session, not the second in charge under of the EU High Commission to Namibia or the EU Embassy to Namibia. But in the second one where they were talking about the global gateway and what it means and financing, development financing. And this guy was a South African in the audience. And he asked the question about, what kind of countries does the EU work with? Now, I did not understand where he came with that question. I don't know why the South Africans always ask these weird questions. And you will sometimes be shocked in terms of the questions they ask. They ask the question there as if
they are personally involved in the politics of whatever is happening wherever.
Yeah.
Because where does the question of with what kind of a country would the EU work with? And the guy, what was the guy's name? Toch, the guy with a French name. He had to ask, literally, what do you mean by what kind of country will we work with?
Yeah.
He asked, you mentioned, and then the guy elaborated by saying, but you mentioned a country that sort of like has similar values. Well, what does that mean? And he explained, it's if you have the same particular values. Now, it's a broad, vague answer to give.
Yeah.
Because I can show you directly, well, if you find yourself in Africa, the Caribbean, and the Pacific Islands, nations, regions, you obviously know that you are working with the EU based upon the Samoa Agreement. You work from the Samoa Agreement. And you work from the precursor agreement before the Samoa Agreement. And you work on the agreement before that agreement to understand where, how, and for how long has the EU had this direct, targeted global south approach. You see, the EU didn't target South America. The EU didn't target Southeast Asia. Because in Southeast Asia, there's like three, or even South Asia, there's like three major economies there. There's India, who's also expanding its international relations influence.
Yeah.
Then there's obviously China that is expanding, that obviously has now a very broad international relations presence across, not just in Asia, South Asia and Asia and the Middle East, but also extensively in Africa and also extensively in South America. And finally, there's Japan, who is recognized as an advanced economy, a developed advanced economy. But Japan is now also realizing they also need to play the same game. Enhance soft power. You don't know how many activities, how much you would see here on that one WhatsApp group that I'm on of the Ministry of Agriculture. How many times Japan is involved in agricultural endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks back, they went to Marintal. So, where you see this discussion of soft power now being enhanced, you have to now ask yourself the question, okay. Okay, so the enhancement of soft power now also typically means look at the actions that basically fuels this reaction. What has those actions been? Last year's Liberation Day tariff announcements, 3 April, was a direct one. Because who stepped in? Suddenly, it was Europe, it was China, it was India. Definitely always wants an opportunity. But everybody realized, you know what, let's rather talk to each other than rather talking through the US with each other. Let's talk to each other directly.
Yeah.
And you've seen greater approaches between countries taking place. That's also why you saw the AFCFTA discussions that you and I have focused on for the first half of this year, through what has been happening on the continent, is that the AFCFTA rhetoric has now become a lot more robust, a lot more emphasis, a lot more encouragement. Please, let's make this thing work. Yeah, but the first thing we first have to do is we have to build a road between point A where Dwight is standing and point B where Helmut is standing. We have to build that road. We shouldn't just build a road that runs from the mine to the harbor, port, or from the mine literally to a far off desolate facility there that doesn't connect a town. But there's a town right next to the facility. So we also have to understand our own particular development layout. Because your development layout is based upon where you have needs. Where you have needs, that's how you approach those needs with resources. Now, here's the thing, Howard. That America First Global Health Strategy thing, with its fiasco, with three African countries saying,
"Yeah,
we will say no to this agreement because of what was it? Data protection issues."
Yeah.
You firstly realize, first and foremost, it seems like the current American government, not government, but the current American
administration.
Is it? Should I say administration? But basically, the people that represent the administration, they come with something that doesn't look bona fide on the surface. It looks bona fide on the surface, but in real understanding, the damage and the malice can be very deep lying. Like, for example, what Ruto was told. Yeah, thank you for signing, but you needed our approval basically to rubber stamp what you signed on.
Yeah, his courts told him that. But look, the thing is...
And he still had to return that money, ne? Because he still didn't get the money.
And his wasn't that yesterday when his health minister had to first of all apologize to the court
apologize to the court.
He was told not to go on with the with the Ebola quarantine facility in Kenya.
Meaning he was given an instruction.
He was given instructions to go on, and he decided to go on. And when he was summoned to court. For defying court orders, his excuse was, "You know what? He thought that the court order only applied to, I think the
That minister's gonna go to jail. For just that sentence that you're now here summarizing for us.
Yeah, I thought the court order only applied partially. I'm not sure if he was talking about the either bringing in sick people, but not the construction of the site.
No.
And the court was like, no, we meant all of it.
Helmut,
so now.
Helmut, I think that guy is gonna be, he's literally gonna go to jail. Cause you and I know, going against the court order is literally contempt of court.
Exactly. That is the
way. And the British system of contempt of court is literally, we don't waste time with you. We don't care where you were, whether you were in the middle of a shower, you will get locked up.
The good thing is he was forgiven.
No, by the court. Forgiven. It's a Kenyan.
Look, man.
Kenya
is my favorite country.
Kenya is full of jokes. Kenya is just full of jokes. But yeah.
Kenya is my favorite country in Africa when it comes to foreign and domestic policy.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
So, We also look at the international.
Oh, just hold that thought. I have the I have the article here for you from Africa News. Kenya has ordered a halt on the preparation of the US-run Ebola quarantine facility. The health minister told a court on Tuesday after being held in contempt for ignoring the previous stop work order, and this is him now speaking.
Yeah.
I have directed the immediate and complete cessation of any intended construction site preparation or related activities concerning the Laikipia Air Base facility pending the hearing and the determination of the substantive petition or until further orders of this court, that's what the minister said. Now, why did you then go ahead after we told you the first time not to do this? Why did you do it? I was driven by a zealous... that's one thing I like about Africans. Our English is top-notch, but then so is the stupidity.
For some reason, we bring out Oxford-level English.
I know.
To explain as when we're standing in front of the
principal. Why did you screw up? Okay, I'm sorry, I screwed up, but no, he didn't. Yeah. Just went straight to... I was driven by a zealous attempt to...
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? I was driven by a zealous attempt to ensure that public health is always assured. The publics are the ones that were protesting for you not to do it, but you wanted to do it for the sake of the public.
Because they didn't have Ebola even in their country. And that was what the public was telling their own minister. Don't build this facility here because it is not for us.
And his excuse is he wanted to build it for the public. Are you kidding me? Isn't the public the reason why the court told you to stop building the thing? Like, politicians are difficult to...
Man.
Now, here's your and my favorite part. The court accepted the minister's apology and spared him a possible jail sentence.
Because he would have gone to jail if he was adamant in putting up a defense.
Look, I love Kenya.
The reason he probably got scot-free off net.
Yeah.
It's probably it was his first offense.
Yeah. And he was issued a warning against any future non-compliance.
Now here's the question.
Now, do you really have to be told that though?
Are the Americans still building, or is it just the smoke and mirrors?
Look, there's a serious disconnection between leaders and their people. And this is something that I'm seeing in a lot of Western countries.
Yeah.
You have a lot of Americans that were asking the same question. Why did Trump go to war again? Now, so there seem to be a miscommunication between what the people want and the so-called public representative, their representative in executive office is doing.
Mm.
My favorite example of this is Israel. You have the Israeli governments out there pouring millions of dollars in PR to sort of like, to tell people that no, our soldiers are not doing all these things that you are saying that they are doing. And you have the soldiers themselves in the field making videos of themselves doing the exact same thing their government is denying.
And trying to defend them from.
Exactly. So there's a disconnection again here. And when you look at it in case of Kenya, for example, you have the America First Global Health Strategy, the health aid agreement. William Ruto signed the agreement in Washington.
Mm.
And when he got to Kenya, his own court told him, yeah, buddy, we hate to break this to you, but we are not going to. So now, when you are a public representative, administrative law dictates when you are making a decision that will impact the public, consultations should be your first thing, not signing. Bro was just signing left, right, and center. Now, at this point, you can't help but ask yourself one question. There's a breakdown of communication here. You are a public representative. You are in office to represent the public. Mm. Again, we are back to Matthew Miller here. You are not supposed to be doing what benefits you or what you think is right.
Doesn't Matthew Miller look like a twin brother of Stephen Miller?
No, the difference is Matthew Miller has hair.
I know. One has hair, the other one does not.
The other one is...
is unfortunately somehow cursed. Yes, we know.
My example will be against my practice for what I'm preparing for Friday. But...
Friday or Saturday?
Friday. The new 30 minutes segment.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Believe me, I'm practicing.
We've got to keep it a secret.
Yeah.
So yes, now, mm-hmm. In fairness, Hamoud, it's not just about narrative and also PR games that obviously have to take place. Specifically, because in Africa, it's obviously a discussion about access to information that has to, firstly, that's one of the first particular compliance elements, but that in Namibia's case, our law is also slightly just
with regards dormant. To access to information?
Yeah, it's just dormant. Now, the reason why Kenya obviously looks so entertaining for a
Yeah, that's the correct word.
I almost wanted to say exciting, but then I was like, no, it's not a joke. Let me make it more entertaining, even though the word entertaining probably has a lot more joking in it than exciting. But why Kenya looks so entertaining is because Kenya has so much information that's basically coming out of things that are happening in that part of the world.
Yeah.
The same too also for South Africa, with what is now also boiling over into an African scenario, and this is primarily where literally Helmut AFC if they is busy crumbling in response to South Africa because of this, the South African march on march or march and to Operation Dudulanes.
I understand the due date is coming.
Not just the due date. The Ghanaians had a response in Ghana. They literally said, the Ghanaian government must deal away with doing business with any South African businesses that wish to open up in that part of West Africa.
And their government is about to spend about $600 million basically in preparation to combat the possible violence that will ensue on the 30th of June.
Yeah. So when you ask yourself that particular question, South Africa in its own right also, and in its own particular image management, they are also basically at fault for creating one of the most destructive things that literally can make AFCFTA fail.
Yeah.
Look, Helmut, SADC cannot ignore its economic integration goal.
Yeah.
Because SADC's existence is based upon South Africa's vibrance and robustness, basically to be the anchor for that integration. But then the South Africans are doing the exact opposite of the goals that SADC wants to achieve and that AU want to achieve. They're literally doing the exact opposite. And they're literally, just because of human rights violations primarily, going to create a massive divide between South Africa and the rest of SADC. Even though us in SACU will also be feeling some of the negative aspects, we'll probably have to do a lot of the, what do they call that thing? Image management or reputation management on behalf of South Africa. Can you believe it, Helmut? We will end up doing that role on behalf of South Africa. Why do I say this? Because our economies are integrated with South African economy. Our economy, the Botswanan economy, Lesotho and Eswatini. So we will have to do that also on behalf of South Africa, even though we're not doing it. Because first and foremost, we literally don't have a manufacturing base to literally, what do they call that thing, to decouple from the rand.
Yeah, no, we don't.
We don't. Now, we will rely also on AFCFTA's goodwill discussion. Just like South Africa seems to be ignoring and realizing that they're literally dropping the ball on achieving any goodwill with the rest of Africa. Because I'm still trying to ask him. I'm trying to get behind that argument.
Yeah.
Where did March come from? Because Operation Dudula did not die down.
Mm.
Where did March come from? Who is behind this thing?
I think that's the question that a lot of even, public representatives in South Africa asking themselves. But it's a good thing you brought up SADC, because it it reminded me of a SADC article I was reading last night.
Yeah.
On the 22nd of June, and when was that? That was on Monday. They met in Madagascar. Was that in Madagascar? But anyway, they met for a SADC organ Troika Extraordinary Summit reaffirms commitment to peace, stability, and regional integration in Madagascar and DRC. And of course, in DRC, they did talk about, they did talk about Ebola and the Doha and the Washington agreements.
Can you believe, apparently, the founder of March is a radio DJ from KZN, a woman.
What are we waiting for? Okay, we're not DJs.
Let me read this out. This is someone else, but it's one of those accounts on Facebook that, try to be like news accounts. Apparently it says that the founder and the leader of March, Jacinto Mangubese Zuma has been found.
Yeah, I know that lady.
Has been unfairly dismissed by Vuma FM KZN. She has money. She is doing this for the love of the country. One of the fewest people to talk about the issue of immigrants on radio. So she was busy doing Radio Rwanda.
Rwanda.
So she was doing a Radio Rwanda.
That's one of those things that constantly reminds me about just how dangerous my job is. The whole, Jacinta's face comes up a lot, and I listen to a bunch of, of her comments. And as you can imagine, just like every country, a lot of people all across South Africa are polarized over the whole immigration issue. And, you have, three main categories, because you have one group in the middle that basically seem not to care. And you have one that is far, right, if you can describe it that. And you have those ones that are saying, okay, you know what? If you look at the statistics that we have, all the points that you are making as to why we have economic problems, they are not being caused by immigrations. It's, yes, we have an illegal, illegal immigrant discussion. But you also have to ask, there's one white guy that pointed out that you do realize that our own Ministry of Home Affairs here has a documentation issue. There are a lot of undocumented South Africans. Now, how are you going to tell the difference between someone who is here illegally and who is not? Because if you are looking for documentations, you're going to run into a lot of undocumented South Africans. Now, even if, Namibia is having the exact same problem. There are a lot of Namibians that still don't have access to national documents. Mm. And so now what that bring up is and it's a good thing you tied that whole thing to the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, because it's one of those things that is going to be a stumbling block. We can have all the agreements and all the infrastructure, but if we can't get along, forget about the whole thing. Mm. One thing that they looked at the troika that the SADC just had was, believe it or not,
she's even an award-winning radio presenter.
Stability, peace and security, and most importantly, my favorite part, cooperation.
Of course.
This cooperation, look, the guy that was pointing out in South Africa that what are you looking for? What will tell you whether or not someone is a documented, a documented or undocumented immigrant?
Mm.
Yeah. So now the thing is, here's the thing. The problem is undocumented. That cannot be a criteria because there are a lot of undocumented South Africans themselves.
True.
Yeah, that's one big problem. And one piece of the puzzle that you are missing is one of, this is going to lead to, actually it has already led to a diplomatic incidents. Mm. Nigerians were throwing their own people out of the country. Now, the South African government actually, they have another international incidents with Malawi, because I think a Malawian citizen was killed. And now Malawi wants answers, and the South African government now have to answer those questions.
Mm.
So what started off as a societal grievance in just one, one province has caused multiple international incidents with Ghana, with Ghana, Nigeria, and now Malawi. And what you're looking at is very soon this will, this will cascade into economic problems.
Yeah.
You remember the Bolt Wars? That was fought by South Africa and Nigeria. Was that last year? The Hale ride services.
Oh yes, where they were bombarding each other's e-ride hailing services with fake e-rides, fake requests.
Except that was just in one sector.
Yeah.
This one, I'm afraid, is going to go now. Look.
But that was between, regular South Africans.
Yeah, that was just
Nigerians.
Between regular citizens
because
in both countries.
It still has to spill over into government to government hostility.
The good thing is that one did not spill over into government and government hostility. This one for South Africa have spilled over into multiple governments asking questions.
Yeah. Before we continue, we quickly take a live read, guys. The Velvicia University NQA approval for expansion of scope. Velvicia University is pleased to inform all stakeholders that the Namibia Qualifications Authority NQA Council has approved our application for scope. has approved our application for expansion of scope. This approval grants accreditation for the following NQF registered qualifications offered through full-time blended learning mode at our university. The following are the Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, and the Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6. Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
You know, if you listened to Cyril Ramaphosa's speech while he was responding to that, the whole March and March thing where he was basically trying to calm the country down.
Yeah.
One thing that you can see is that, well, just like every father, if you can look at it like that, because it's the father of the nation, it's just representing his whole, you know, his country. There's something he knows he's not telling people.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's basically to be expected from anyone in his shoe, because you don't just go around ranting things you can't prove.
Mm.
Because he did point out that he did point to forces that want to destabilize the country, and which makes a lot of sense, because movements like that are seldom organic.
Yeah,
someone with a lot of deep pockets could be.
Someone started it.
Someone started it, and yeah, they're backing it up, and you know, the lady at the you know, as a head is just the mouthpiece,
or she's at least the face.
Yeah.
At least she's the face.
She's the face.
Yeah. That is the thing, Helmut. At least you can at least put a face to the person, to one of the people. How South Africa obviously works, as we've seen with the two commissions currently ongoing, the Mkandla and, is it Mkandla?
Or is it Mantlanga or something.
Or Matlala.
No, Matlala is the suspect. Mantlanga.
That's true. So, the two particular commissions that aim to tie, the one is most the parliamentary one, the other one is a judicial one.
Yeah.
Where they aim to tie various particular loose ends that emanate basically from the South African Police Service,
yeah,
and from the revelations that Mgwanazi made last year in September. Now, what also emanates from what Mgwanazi highlighted is specifically that there's a lot of actors in the background,
so
that are fueling things. Now, you can look at that also.
I did not trace it to Mkwanazi.
Into the broadest discussion, specifically of like this gold discussion we started off on, where you sometimes don't know where some of the particular machinations for foreign policy comes from in the US
in terms of influence.
Because Pete Hegseth is once again there throwing his toys out, apparently, against the NATO countries. And apparently the NATO countries are not doing anything for the US. And everyone is probably by now wondering, now what do you want them to do for you?
Yeah.
What do you guys want to do? Because the Americans are apparently starting withdrawals out of Germany. Germany is now ramping up to spend more on its army and on its infrastructure. Which actually started last year,
I'm sorry, one more time. Germany is doing what?
It's ramping up. It's spending more on its army and its infrastructure, as the Americans are now wanting to literally pull out of Ramstein.
So Germany is rearming, is all I had.
Yeah.
Well,
there's nothing you can do, Helmut. Namibia is there.
I'm way in the southern part of the African continent.
You can't come in there. Do you know if you ever go read up about the historical documents there?
Yeah.
About how the Germans loved us, even after causing the atrocities they caused here. Yes, we are like the love of when someone loves a newborn baby just unconditionally, you know, that parent that just loves the kid doesn't even know where does this love come from. I know we are blood, but from where is this love coming from? Why, what does it sound, what does it feel so over the top?
That's the feeling you get after getting out of a toxic relationship, and you get in a good one. You question everything. Okay, you bought for me a chocolate, what for? Okay, what are you up to?
The previous girlfriend didn't do that.
The previous girlfriend didn't do that. You know.
Why are you happy, by the way?
You know, what's your end goal? Because yeah. Now, the previous girlfriend bought me a pair of socks and then put it on her status saying that spoil your man.
You become a public relations too.
I know.
Look here, look here, look here. I bought him socks and he's walking around visiting other women with those
yeah,
socks.
Yeah, if it wasn't for me, he would not have socks.
And you were like, it's just socks.
Why did I even accept this?
It's just socks. But yeah.
So, okay, now, here is the very simple and painful conclusion. Africa has a lot...
conclusion can't be painful.
Oh, no, it is painful. Africa has a lot of gold underground.
Yeah.
But not any in, not at least not enough in our storage vaults. And countries that don't have the gold underground have a lot of it in their storage vaults.
Well, there's also the biggest producers that definitely are storing it.
They are
stocked.
Actually, the Russians are selling some of it.
Because they have too much.
They have a lot of
it. It's like with their uranium. Can you believe a journalist the other day asked this guy from Rosatom, that article I wrote specifically about the different, what's the thing's name? Tochman. The three water tables. Aquifers. That there's technically five aquifers. And only then did I realize that it's technically a basin. It's not one massive aquifer.
That's what I thought. I thought it's just one giant pool like you'd find on surface water.
Yeah, that's what we were all told. It's literally, there's one cross-boundary, trans-boundary one.
Between South Africa, Botswana, and Namibia.
Yeah, but that one is the deepest of the aquifers. It's the deepest of the aquifers. And apparently it's not even where the extraction is going to take place. But anyway, besides that particular discussion of labeling, and looking at specifically public relations and all that, the question that was asked to the guy was literally one based upon, will US, Russia export our uranium? I almost answered, but I kept quiet because the guy was sitting right next to me.
Export to where?
To Russia. And then he said, said, this guy responded by literally saying, no, we are here to help with nuclear, basically with assistance. It's basically assistance work.
Yeah.
It's like these development agencies that come to Namibia and say,
they are from a developed country already.
Yeah.
They are not here to steal your development. Yeah. Okay, they are here to steal your gold and lithium. But anyway.
We are here to help you build a water pipe. As if Namibians have never built a water pipe. But we come to help you.
Yeah.
However, this is a completely different way of extraction because the extraction is taking place through a tube this broad. Literally, Amr, it's this broad, the hole in the ground. That is what the borehole licenses were pulled back on, because it's literally this big.
So, you know,
it's not a borehole this big. It's literally this big.
Look, I'm still on that question. Like,
five holes this big.
That's like me asking the Chinese who is investing into Namibia's car industry, and my question to him is, so are you going to export the cars that you are going to make here to China? His answer would be like, dude, we already make that.
Yeah, we have factories there.
Yeah, the same thing, and that's basically the same. That's basically the same case with Russia. Kazakhstan produces a whole lot of uranium, which they have unlimited access to.
Actually, the Russians sell between those guys. They sell the uranium between each other.
And now, when it comes to uranium, they have a heck of it.
Yeah.
And basically, all kinds of natural resources, really. They have a lot of it.
Yeah,
that explains why they didn't show up here running around with guns and all stuff.
But that's the unnatural thing about Russia. Russia is a ridiculous amount of coal. A ridiculous amount of oil, a ridiculous amount of gas. Helmut, they could give any price of gas to Europe. Europe got it literally on the cheap. But Europe literally wants to buy Canadian and American gas that'll be more expensive just because the boat bringing the thing here is going to be expensive.
Uh-huh. And also, we have to go because we are 6 minutes
that is true,
into
that is,
your time.
That is true. That
I
is
mean,
true.
Actually, 8 minutes into your time.
On that note, guys.
Until tomorrow.
Yeah, let's see each other again, same time, same place.
All right.